Anybody who's ever played a musical instrument can probably connect to the fascination with finding an older instrument. You know, like seeing a cool old Sunburst guitar in an antique shop or at a yard sale. We're talking truly old and significant instruments in this final segment today as we hear about the Schumann Collection of Vintage Instruments. Stephen Bacon is the master at Bellwood Violins and is the conservator of the collection. He's in the studio with me here. Stephen, welcome.
Hi, thanks.
And Morgan Shaughnessy, fellow musician, and he calls himself emeritus of Bellwood Violins because he worked there until very recently. Also in the studio, good to see you, Morgan.
Thank you for having me. Good to be here.
So, Stephen, what is the Schumann Collection?
Jack Schumann collected, I think it's over 750 instruments. He donated to the university a number of years ago. They're mostly in storage in the rare books room, along with the Shakespeare folio at the vault, the book vault there in the library. And we have many on display at the foyer in the music building. If you go into the performance hall, you'll see a lot of them displayed there. But we have many more than that. And we supply a lot of them through students and professors, ex-professors, professionals like Morgan, to get to learn to know the instruments and explore some of these older sounds that we don't usually hear.
What's the story of the collection? What was Jack Schumann doing? I mean, did this start with him getting a Sunburst guitar at an antique show or a yard sale?
No, it started with a Hawaiian guitar.
Really?
And then it went to a Chinese sona, a Chinese sham. Mm-hmm. And just grew from there. He got very involved in early music programs. Had UCLA, UC San Diego, did multiple master's degrees and doctorate. And his doctorate was in art history, but he studied the iconography of musical instruments. And he played lute and recorders and just everything involved with the early music scene. So it's, of course, he ends up in Ashland because we have a strong foundation in that from years of the Shakespeare producing the Green shows.
But if I'm not mistaken, he lived in London, which is where he got most of the instruments at that time where he was living.
That's right. The story is that he lived on bread and butter, went to every auction and bought everything that wasn't a violin.
Really? Now, the OSF connection actually brought you to Ashland, I understand, Stephen. You came for the Green Show years ago?
That's right. Yeah, I came in 79 and fell in love with the area and figured out how do I make a living here. I went off to Europe, came back with some chops as a recorder maker and worked on violins and all sorts of instruments, had violin people in the family, so depended on that to build a business. I've now been in business at Bellwood for 30 years. Very happy about that. This is our anniversary.
Well, congratulations.
Thanks.
Hard enough to play a musical instrument well. I can imagine the level of care and skill is really something that takes a while to develop for making musical instruments.
Yeah, it's really fascinating. You do have to understand how they work. I, of all people who run a violin shop, play violin very poorly. I do play viola da gamba and some of the historic stringed instruments, but I do understand the mechanics. I understand the correct way to do things rather than kind of the fiddle fixing way. There are different techniques. We have one young student in our shop who we have one of his fiddles here today, Alex Bektinica, who's somebody who worked for me from 12 to 18, learned the skill of repairing, restoring, and then went on to Cremona to study in Italy and got his master's degree in violin making. He's making incredible instruments. He's fast, which is what it takes, and he's accurate, highly accurate and trained by eye.
Okay, the room is loaded with musical potential here, and I've been obscuring it thus far. So why don't we talk to Morgan while I give you a chance to get your instrument in place. Stephen, Morgan, you have a nickel harpa in your lap, which for the radio listener looks like a combination of a stretched violin and the gluing of a small piano to it around the neck region. What is that?
With the action of a typewriter.
Yes.
Well, a nickel harpa, nickel is an old Swedish word for key, like a key on a piano.
Mm-hmm.
And harpa is, of course, a fiddle. And so this instrument came from the Uppland region, which mm-hmm. is right above Stockholm. And the earliest one we have is from the 17th century. So it comes from a long tradition in Sweden. And this particular one belongs to the collection, the Schumann collection. I met it 2.5 years ago mm-hmm. when Vesen, which is a Swedish band, came through town. And I believe they were
I think
here.
They might have been in studio with us. Yes.
Yeah. And they came, and the night before, Steve passed me the nickel harpa out of the collection and says, here, play this in their masterclass tomorrow. And I go, how do you tune this thing? So he says, I don't know, look on Google. And then I found out, oh, it's basically a viola. So the tuning is very similar to a viola, and so the fingering is too. And I was hooked instantly. I stayed up all night long in the shop playing Bach on the thing.
Uh-huh.
And I've since been to Sweden twice, collecting repertoire, studying and learning how to actually play the instrument instead of just playing it like a viola. And also here in town, I've been learning from a great friend of mine, Olaf Söderback, who's our resident Swede over in Tallinn. He's this great fiddling gem, and he's taught me all these tunes.
Several groupings of strings that reminds me of a zither or something. Do they play chords in those sections or something?
Yeah. So on this instrument, there are three melody strings and then one bass string. So I have a range of notes all the way from a very high G, chromatically, down to a low G, and then a bass note, which I keep on D. In Sweden, you put it on C. But I play with more Irish musicians than Swedish musicians, and they really like D. And then in between those strings, kind of cut further into the bridge, are a whole bunch of mostly in-tune resonant strings. And when I say resonant, I mean when I play a note, like an F sharp, there's a string that's vibrating along. Now, I'll play the same note, and I'll damp the string. And you hear it. So it's almost like having your own reverb or your own castle that you're carrying around with you and playing very echoey sounds in.
All right, we don't have a lot of time left. What do you guys want to play?
Why don't you just play something on the Nick Larpa for him?
Let's see. I'll play the very first polska that I ever learned. It's an old Swedish polska called Gringius, like a dance in three.
Okay, a little. This is really a polka.
Polska.
Polska. Okay.
Has one extra consonant and one extra beat. It's kind of like a waltz plus a three-legged sack race. And a polska is a really unusual rhythm. I learned how to dance it in Sweden at 1 o'clock in the morning with a very forgiving 7.5-foot-tall blonde lady, and she told me it's like an egg that you roll around the floor. Because there's a heavy beat, like you step one, sort of hop in place on beat two, and take a smaller step on beat three. So it's one, three, one. And it's a lot of fun, and there are fast ones and slow ones, and every town dances it slightly differently. So if you have a good ear and a good eye, you can tell where somebody's from based on how they dance and how the music is being played.
Wow, that's quite a collection of musical information and instrument knowledge that you've got contained in your head.
It's thanks to the Schumann collection. I was just an ordinary civilian violist playing his Rogue Valley Symphony before I got involved in this Pandora's box of musical strangeness. And there's another instrument over here. Do we have time to talk about
this
little?
Of course, yeah.
Yes, so this one I'm still getting familiar with. Stephen, what exactly is this?
Okay, this is a collection instrument in the collection that we haven't known a whole lot about. We called it a viola de braccio, viola of the arm, for years. But I recently met with Bill Monocle, one of the experts on these instruments. This is the early version of the viola de mor. What makes this different than the later viola de mors, which had sympathetic strings, just as the nickel arpa did, the earlier version just had metal strings, straight metal strings. And can you just bow the strings there, Morgan, to get a sense of the timbre? Very different sound than the gut strings of the day, which were the common strings. So we're very excited that this is a timbre that has not been heard. It's just this instrument went obsolete. This one was made in 1711 in Augsburg by Schoen, Johannes Schoen, a great maker, very famous. Anyway, incredible instrument, and this is the first time it's had its voice in many years.
And there's a head on top of the head
of the on all viola de mors. It's very common to have a blindfolded cherub on the headstock.
Uh-huh. Why blindfolded?
I think music, the muse is blind, okay. is non-biased. It's also very interesting. The F holes are very close to the, the Moors or the Arabian mm-hmm. letters.
Very craggy looking.
Yeah, yeah.
So is something you want to play on there, Morgan O'Shaughnessy?
Well, I've known this instrument in this tuning for about 3 minutes, but I'll just sort of noodle around a little bit. So it's very much closer to a gamba tuning, which is essentially all, or a guitar, so all the strings are in a chord.
Good, very good.
I don't know what planet that jazz came from. It was fun to play. I like playing these kinds of instruments because they have a lot of resonance to them, mm-hmm. and you can feel them vibrating against your chin or against your collarbone. Mm-hmm. Or with a nickel harp, it's like you hit the low notes and your whole body shakes. It's quite fun.
Oh, that is fun. Yeah. How many instruments in the music collection, Stephen Bagel?
Around 750.
Wow.
Yeah. So, and now this weekend we'll be giving a talk on Saturday at 10 till noon at the Southern Oregon Historic Society down on Central in Oregon. And Central in Medford, excuse mm-hmm. me. And we'll bring a lot of that. We're going to feature a lot of the local violin makers since the Gold Rush days. Mm-hmm. And many people, the Applegates, Victor Gardner, incredible man who taught many people wood people. Anyway, we're going to have a wonderful talk and a presentation about these earlier makers. We'll have a lot of the instruments from all the local makers represented. It should be great.
What makes an instrument by one maker so much better than any? Why did Antonio Stradivari make violins that are still considered the best in the world ever?
He started at 8, ended at 80.
Ah, he had a little practice. He had more than 30 years.
Yeah.
Well, that's interesting. So do you have any other instruments in the room with you that are worth pulling out to take a look at?
If I may say also, strads are a matter of taste. Mm-hmm. They're actually incredibly hard to play, as we say, under your ear. Because when you're playing the violin, the sound that you're hearing as you're playing it is not the same sound that you hear in the hall. Strads under your ear sound very thin and very hard and nasally. But by the time the sound gets out into the hall, it's developed into this gorgeous richness. So many people I know who... professional players in the world who've played strads prefer other instruments by other makers for their more kind of casual day-to-day playing because they're much more pleasurable under their ear. But when, of course, when they get in the concert hall, it's like, okay, time to get out the strad. It's a bit like a Maserati, I suppose. But there are some incredible modern makers that are approaching Stradivari's greatness.
Okay. As I look at the violin that you've just been handed by Stephen, it looks like any other violin. What's the story on this one, though?
This one was made by our friend Alex Bakhtenik down in the shop. Mm-hmm. Alex is a wonderful maker and very talented. He actually just made a viola for me. He finished it this last summer. It's a beautiful instrument. Steve, tell us a bit more about this violin.
Well, this is a copy of the Strad style. So everybody calls up once a month, two or three calls, and we have a Stradivarius. Can we bring it in? And, of course, they're all reproductions. It's in the style of Stradivarius. So this is in the style of Stradivarius. And the bow, I should mention that the bow is by Daryl Hanks, another local person. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Almost out of time here. Give me an idea of the enormity of the task of trying to maintain, to be the conservator of a collection of 750 vintage musical instruments.
We do what we can. We don't really have a budget here, and so we do the best we can to present it and keep it available for the public. We have a lot of the people that borrow the instruments supply the money to maintain them, as a matter of fact. And we just do the best we can.
So it is something of a lending library, people, if people want a particular instrument?
It is. It is, yes.
Mm-hmm. All right. So how much time have you spent now with the nickel harpa, Morgan, since you got to know it?
Oh, boy. I've delightfully lost track. It's, I think I spend about 12 to 14 hours a week working on nickel harpa, sometimes more, sometimes less. And then, of course, when I go to jam sessions, I'll play for 3 or 4 hours at a time, mm-hmm. just sawing away. Depends on when the restaurant wants to kick us out, really. Oh. We have a great one here at the Black Sheep on Sunday. Sometimes I go there when I'm in town.
Okay. Marvelous instruments, a great collection, and you can see part of it Saturday, you said, 10 to noon at the History Center in Medford?
That's correct.
All right. Stephen Bagan and Morgan O'Shaughnessy, thanks so much for letting us in and look at the Schumann collection today.